And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, on trial for murder, Ahsoka faces her greatest challenge ever. There will be a lot of feelings and emotions as Anakin and Ahsoka must face their future. We're talking about the wrong Jedi this week. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing terrible, Hope.
I haven't talked to you in 10 minutes.
Yeah, not even that.
What happened to the last 10 minutes, Chris?
I'm doing some sewing and I pricked my finger.
Oh, no.
No, I just made that up just so I could say I'm feeling terrible. I feel great, just like last time.
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody. It's boring, but I just feel great.
Well, we can't help that we're recording two tonight and, like, nothing exciting happened in the last 10 minutes.
I don't know why. I shouldn't like it, but I like doing two episodes at a time. I like when we do that.
I do and I don't at the exact same time because, like, we're getting caught up with our Facebook feedback. We haven't had any, like, iTunes feedback to give us some, like, distance. So I'm just like, I'm running out of feedback. Oh, God. I think we're, like, one episode away from where we are on Facebook whenever we do two, so. But I'm glad we did two tonight because this is the arc that we needed to do these last two episodes together.
Yeah.
It's not like two one-and-dones that were, like, separate. Like, these, I feel like, are the best ones to do that when you're in these arcs. Or the droid arc when we just wanted to get it done as fast as possible.
We wanted to get it the hell out of rotation, yes.
As fast as we could. But I just have to ask, did you like this episode?
I did. I liked it better than the last episode.
Really?
I have some things to say about this, but at the same time I did like this episode.
You want a spoiler?
Okay.
This is my 10 for 10 of the season.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm saying that I'm very aware where there are flaws in this episode.
No, I can understand that character-wise. This has got Hope written all over it.
Yeah, this is my 10 for 10 of the season. So, well, I have a bajillion and 12 notes. We should probably get started or we're going to be here forever.
All right.
Okay, let me take a sip of my coffee. I'm almost out of coffee. Ready?
Oh, I'm ready. You know I'm ready.
I know. The Wrong Jedi is the 108th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on March 2nd, 2013. It was written by Charles Murray and directed by Dave Filoni, so you know it's going to be a good one. Some extra information for you. The episode was named for the 1956 Alfred Hitchcock film, The Wrong Man. This episode marked Tim Curry's first credited appearance as Palpatine, voiced after Ian Abercrombie's death in January 2012. In order to hide Barriss Offee's identity in this episode's trailer, the animators deliberately colored her lightsaber blade green instead of blue in the scene where Anakin Skywalker used the weapon, because they had a little preview trailer for the episode and they changed her lightsaber color. The lightsaber pikes wielded by the Temple Guards were initially intended to have green blades, but they were changed mid-production to yellow. The shot at the end of the episode where Ahsoka Tano leaves the Jedi Order is based on an actual photograph on East Bay Sky, which had been photographed by Sears director Dave Filoni during the episode's production. The episode fades to black at the end instead of Iris out in order to preserve the emotion at Ahsoka's sad departure. Here's a little bit of Rebels tie-ins for you. One of the Jedi Temple guards during Ahsoka and Barriss's trials ends up becoming the Grand Inquisitor in Rebels. The events with Ophi and Tano left the future Grand Inquisitor feeling disaffected, and he lost his faith in the Jedi Order. This left him susceptible to the pull of the dark side of the Force, and ultimately, at some point, he did fall to the dark side, turned his back on the Jedi Order, and joined Vader and Palpatine to become the Grand Inquisitor. So those guy, one of those guys guarding Ahsoka is the future Grand Inquisitor in Rebels, and I thought that was really cool. The new area of the Jedi Temple was revealed in this episode in the training grounds, near the base of the Jedi's central spire, where grows an ancient gnarled tree with golden boughs. The youngling class from the Kid Arc episode are trained here by Tara Sanu, a.k.a. Camel Joe. The design of the military courtroom is clearly imperial. Suspended from the ceiling are cylinder terminals representing those found in the Death Star. Sadly, on March 11th, StarWars.com announced that the episode also served as the series finale on Cartoon Network. They canceled Clone Wars, but it was later picked up by Netflix to run the final 12 episodes of Season 6. So this would have been the series finale if that hadn't happened. All right, time to read. In the behind-the-scenes featurette, Ashley Eckstein, the voice of Ahsoka, and Dave Filoni discussed the season finale. Ashley Eckstein starts by saying, "The season finale shows us we're getting closer and closer to episode 3. Things are a bit darker. Anakin is darker. You can see and hear his expressions that he's starting to question things a bit. Ahsoka is definitely starting to question things a bit. She's becoming like Anakin more and more every day. I don't think if she had been Anakin's Padawan, I don't think if she was Anakin's Padawan, she would have taken a completely different journey." Dave Filoni comes in and says, "This was something in the original discussion for the episode where we were going to bring her back into the Jedi Order at the end of the episode. But we had an opportunity to do something a little bit different here. I don't think it's ever been a mystery that I've always been in the Ahsoka Lives campaign, but George Lucas was always in the Ahsoka Dies campaign. So I thought expelling her from the Jedi Order was a good move to pushing Ahsoka towards living and that end. We stand on a whole new frontier for her. Things has changed. She's not the same character that she was in the Clone Wars movie." And then Ashley comes back and says, "Ahsoka burst onto the scene as the snippy Padawan. She rightfully so earned the nickname Snips. She had an opinion about everything, and she was very green. She was definitely a sidekick. And now fast forward to season 5, and we have this major turn, and who knows what's next for her. Her life is changing. The Jedi Order is changing. And she's seeing that things will never be the same." And remember last week when I was talking about the music? Here we go. Dave Filoni comes back to talk about the music, and he says, "Throughout this arc with Ahsoka, you might have noticed that the music might have been a little bit different. Kevin Kiner, our composer, went out and he used a full orchestra, which is something that we do not normally do on the show. It's very time-consuming and very expensive for our TV series to do so. But Kevin flew to Prague on his own time, on his own dime, to use a full orchestra for these final episodes. So if you noticed a difference and said, wow, this is fuller, this is bigger than normal, it's all because of Kevin Kiner." And Ashley comes back and says, "Despite all the troubles in the episode, Anakin and Ahsoka come back at the end, and I think you also see how close they have become. This is a huge arc for their relationship. They become in tuned with one another. Ahsoka has to make some really life-changing decisions. All of her education, all of her experiences come to a head. And Ahsoka has to make some choices that are tough." This is my favorite because I love Dave Filoni. Dave Filoni comes back in and says, "Every episode of Clone Wars ends the exact same way with that ring out. And yes, he does sing it in the video and it's very adorable. And he says, "How many times in the show where you're sitting at home and hopefully I've done my job, worked you up to this nice emotional state, and then bam, smack you right out of it with that ring out. For years, I've wanted to get rid of it. Not on every episode, but on certain episodes. And I thought this arc was the arc where it had to happen. I knew as soon as we read the scripts, as soon as George sat down and we talked about the idea, I sat there and I thought to myself secretly, this is the episode that's going to fade to black. And I know George well enough by now, and I know that there's no way I could sell this to him as we were watching the rough cut. It's not going to happen. So when he watched through the rough cut for the first time, I didn't put it in there. I knew to sell this to him right, we needed the lighting, we needed the sky, we needed the full orchestra by Kevin Kiner. So when George watched it in color, that's when we faded it out. I got some notes about this stuff. I just wanted to point out what Ashley Eckstein said about what if Ahsoka had a different master, and we've just talked about that before, like what she would have been like if like Plo Koon had been her master or something like that. And we've also been noting all through this arc how awesome the music has been. We've said it a few times in the last few episodes.
I had an idea, and I think whenever, obviously not today because you had to do so much, I think whenever you do read Dave Filoni, you should do it in Goatman voice.
No. Oh, no. I'm trying to actually figure out what I'm going to do for Rebels because the behind-the-scenes videos is Rebels Recon, and those are like 15 minutes long, and I know I'm not going to be able to transcribe all of it, so I'm probably just going to go through and be like, so-and-so said this. Here's just a couple bullet points.
Yeah, you shouldn't feel the need that you have to just like transcribe the whole thing. They can go watch it on YouTube, for Christ's sake.
These are so interesting, and we learned so much stuff. But then my last note was, I kind of wish Dave Filoni played a trick on George Lucas and like showing him this like emotional end scene and it's fading to black. And then he just cranks it up to 20 with ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. And Dave just like would look at George and be like, see, can I fade to black? Because actually the end credits music was different on this episode too. It's not the regular end credit music. But I just would have loved – I was waiting when he was talking about that if you had played a trick on Dave Filoni and was just – or played a trick on George Lucas and just, like, blared his ears out with that damn ring out. That would have been hilarious.
Just like – do you remember that old cartoon with the family gets the new puppy and it always comes up behind the cat and barks at it and the cat ends up, like, gripped onto the ceiling shaking?
Yeah.
That's what they should have done. They should have just hit it at that level so George Lucas was like – on the ceiling, like, gripped onto the chandelier, like, ah. How do you like that, George? A little jarring, huh?
Yeah, can we fade to black now? Thanks. Kevin wrote this beautiful piece for the end credits. Listen to this. But, yeah. So I just thought that was cool. You know, it's, Ba-da-ba-da-ba-da, it's time for freaking Yoda. He's gonna say things to you in bed.
Yoda's played a few tricks on George Lucas.
What sort of tricks?
Secret Jedi tricks.
Do you call George Lucas Daddy? Because he created you?
Maybe.
Oh, that's actually like, I don't get it when people are like, this is my daddy. I'm like, you're disgusting.
I live in his backpack.
Yeah, I don't get the daddy thing. And I, you know what, guys? I don't need it explained to me because I actually don't want to know.
Going to hang out on Skinwalker Ranch this weekend.
Oh, God! Why'd you have to bring that back from last week? I had pushed that out of my mind. Oh, I had pushed that completely out of my mind. Why, Yoda, why?
Never forget.
Alright, what's the platitude for this week?
Never give up hope. No matter how dark things seem. In bed?
Yoda?
I liked last week's. This one I don't know about.
Hope here is never gonna give you up. Oh. Never gonna let you down. Never gonna slow down and hurt you.
I realized you were in this one, but I did not make the connection that it could be a Rickroll. You win this one. You win this round, Hope. You win this round, Mullinex, but I'll be back.
Ugh. You already got me with the Skinwalker Ranch. Mm-mm. Act one.
Act one.
Oh, I'm going to need a sound cue in this, Chris. I'm just going to give you a heads up now. All right, so act one. You know, guys, some major shit has been going down. There was a bombing at the Jedi Temple. the bomber, who was a chick named Letta, got caught, but she suddenly died with Ahsoka there interrogating her, and Ahsoka was framed for her murder and went on the run. Well, Anakin, Plo Koon, Rex, and Commander Wolf and Farkin have all been hunting her down. And on the run, Ahsoka teamed up with a Ventress trying to clear her name. But a mysterious force wielder person knocked out Ventress, took her lightsabers and mask, and then attacked Ahsoka, making her think that Ventress betrayed her. The figure knocked out Ahsoka, and Anakin captured her to bring her to trial. On to this week! Well, Farkin's phoning the Jedi Council, saying that the Senate wants Ahsoka for her trial. But Yoda's all like, no, she's gonna stay here and be tried by Jedi traditions. And Farkin's like, that's adorable. The Senate thinks you guys will go easy on Ahsoka, so they want you to expel her from the Jedi Order and turn her over to them. And Obi-Wan steps in like, I just want to make sure that my Grand Padawan gets a fair trial, so she's going to need representation. Who's going to do that? And Farkin doesn't care who her lawyer is, as long as it's not someone from the Jedi Order. And Mace pelts Farkin with all the wet blankets he can find until Farkin hangs up on them. Obi-Wan takes a stand, saying that the Jedi Council should support Ahsoka against Farkin. But the rest of the Council doesn't agree. They don't want to be seen as an active opposition against the Senate. And they have no choice but to do what Farkin says. They go to the Chamber of Judgment to summon Ahsoka and Anakin. And Chris, this is where I need a meanwhile in the Hall of Justice sound effect here. I don't know if there's like music or something, because I'm about to say, meanwhile at the Chamber of Judgment.
Meanwhile at the Hall of Justice.
Ahsoka and Anakin are wait to be seen. Ahsoka is relatively calm while Anakin paces back and forth. They're surrounded by temple guards. Neither of them know what to do anymore, and they're summoned before the council. Her Jedi trial begins, and she pleads that she's not guilty. The council points out all the evidence against her, and Ahsoka doesn't have any evidence to back up any of her claims, but she swears that she and the council are being deceived but in this matter. Obi-Wan looks like he absolutely does not even want to be there at all. And Yoda says it's not just Ahsoka being clouded with the dark side, but everything around the Jedi is being clouded in these times. And Anakin yells that the Council has already made a decision before Ahsoka even got there, and this is all just a formality. And with a heavy tone in his little frog voice, Yoda gives the order that Ahsoka is to be kicked out of the Jedi Order and stripped of all her ranks. Anakin is barred back by the temple guards and watches helplessly as they take Ahsoka's Padawan braids from her.
I know the sound effect you're talking about there in the description. I can find it without somebody saying, meanwhile, the Hall of Justice at the same time as it. But I know what you're talking about with that.
Yes, yeah. It's like, meanwhile, the Hall of Justice.
But there's sort of like a woo sort of sound effect, whooshy sound effect.
Yeah. If you can't find it, that's fine. I just, when they were like, the judgment or the Chamber of Judgment, I was like, the Chamber of Judgment? Is that like the Hall of Justice? It's actually funny.
Sounds
like nearby,
a little heavier than the Hall of Justice, actually.
Actually, it's kind of funny. In a town nearby where I live, one of the little city halls, Jesus, crazy, it looks just like the Hall of Justice. Like, whatever architect designed that thing was definitely a Super Friends fan. It looks just like the Hall of Justice.
I only had one note for this, and man, I shouldn't be bothered by this by this point, because we're two episodes in past this. But, Jesus Christ, why are there no videos, except for they do have video of Ahsoka in the cell? Why isn't anybody going like, why isn't there any, you know, there's nobody checking any evidence on this. It's just like, all of Ahsoka's, all the evidence against her is, what the hell do they call it?
Circumstantial.
And, you know, instead of the Jedi going like, you know, okay, you know, it looks like Ahsoka did this, but why isn't there any video of it in a jail? You know what I mean?
You know, we were talking about that a few episodes ago.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that a lot, like in the actual jail, the person who was behind us knocked out all the video and stuff like that. But, like, on the lower level, Coruscant's, because that's where all the criminals live, right. I'm sure those criminals have knocked out those cameras a long time ago.
No. I know that, but I mean, no, I really should be over all this, but it should be something that that even is addressed as, like, you know, what happened to all this video, and how did and really Ahsoka, as she was breaking out and doing all that, she erased all the video and all that. Shouldn't that be something also not that when you put in security at a, you know, it shouldn't bother me. I should have let this go two episodes ago when they obviously weren't going to touch it. But boy, it could sure help a lot of. Anakin didn't even knock out the video when he went and killed the Padawans, for crying out loud.
I think a lot of it goes back to your point last week of, you know, maybe Farkin's not looking into this because I think he just wants to hang a Jedi.
Oh yeah, he don't care. He'll take whatever Jedi they get, you know.
Yeah.
And even if he knew Ahsoka was not guilty, he would have executed her if somebody else didn't get caught. You know what I mean? So yeah. He didn't care. Just as long as he had a Jedi to wipe out. He's not a big fan.
He's a spaciest. Maybe, like, the Jedi aren't asking about it because they usually deal in the Force. They don't deal with, like, hard video evidence. It's just not really, because they wanted to try her by Jedi traditions, not
yeah,
by...
Yeah, but still, they have cameras in the library. They have cameras in the all the rooms where the younglings are. So, I mean, the Jedi are not, like, averse to technology to do their Jedi thing in concert with the Force, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't see them being like, well, I don't want to, you know, we can only use evidence that's of the Force. I don't know. I just say I know it's for story reasons, but it was kind of driving me nuts that you know, the Jedi Council is, they're not really like falling over themselves to consider Ahsoka guilty. But, you know, they have to be, they're being fair, but they, you know, man, I would, if I was in that Jedi Council, they would all been like, they should all been like, yeah, this is, you know, we might have to take your Jedi privileges away, but we do smell a rat, you know, and we're gonna, you know, try to get to the bottom of all this and stuff. But no, they're just kind of pricks about it.
But actually, I'm, like, on the flip side, though, when we see the Council, only Obi-Wan is defending her. Like, all of them are kind of like they're not sure if it's Ahsoka yet either. Because I bet they went through the exact same thing with, like, General Krell in the Umbara arc. I bet none of them suspected him, and none of them probably suspected Dooku.
Well,
so, like,
Yoda did mention that it was not unanimous, you know.
Yeah. I think Obi-Wan was the one that's not unanimous.
Well, I think maybe Yoda, too, but who knows? Yeah. Who knows with Yoda, though, you know?
But, I mean, I think a lot of this is also, like, after Dooku and Krell and now possibly Ahsoka, I can understand if they're a little bit wary. And probably a little bit, like...
Yeah, and they don't want to be like, oh, she didn't do it, and then end up...
She, like, in Ahsoka, kills more people without them knowing it.
So, that's all I had for the first part.
For me, last week I had mentioned that Anakin and Plo Koon wasn't bringing Ahsoka back to Farkin, and Mace was also warning them to find Ahsoka before other people did, aka Farkin. And I just really like how they're addressing Farkin in this opening act, because they are wise against him now, and they are wary. And
well,
that's why
he's so obviously sleazy and evil, you know.
Yeah. I'm also just really glad that they finally brought Obi-Wan back into this arc and he's being involved with this, because the past three episodes he's been off planet and has been there in like holograms and stuff. And like, at the same time, like, I'm also glad that they didn't bring back Obi-Wan in the last three episodes, because they were already really jammed-packed episodes, and Anakin needed to face being on his own against Ahsoka. But I have missed Obi-Wan in all this.
Yeah,
because he also helped train Ahsoka, and he knows her really well too. So I did
well,
this entire
but they would
arc
have similar
like...
sort of character reactions to Ahsoka. So I think it's better to have have it focus on Anakin's at this point. It also because Anakin is also having his trust in the Jedi eroded too. So
yeah, I am really glad that they finally did involve Obi-Wan in the arc, and I understand why that he wasn't here earlier. But I also still just kind of wish, like, in some of the last couple episodes, there was, like, a scene of Obi-Wan and Anakin, of, like, Anakin just being like, what is the council doing? Why aren't they doing this? And Obi-Wan just being like, kid, we have to get to the bottom of this. We have to keep our heads straight. Mace Windu is going to get on to you if you're emotional. Stop it. I am happy, though, that Obi-Wan is in this episode, because this is the episode he needs to be, because he's on the council. So, one really cool thing that they've done throughout the entire series is show how Anakin and Ahsoka have pretty much switched places over time. I remember we first started kind of talking about it back during the slaver arc, when Anakin was losing his shit over the slavers, and Ahsoka was the one remaining cool. But she also had, like, several looks of, like, whoa, Anakin is losing his cool, and he's killing people. Oh, God. And so, in the beginning, Anakin was cool, but he was also still the more mature one. He was the teacher. And Ahsoka was the immature greenhorn, and she was the rookie. Well, now, like, 5 seasons later, she's clearly matured over the years. And I feel like Anakin is quickly just backsliding more and more. And he's more agitated. He's losing his cool a bit more, and he's losing his edge, which is really nice, because that's what he should be doing right now with the council at this point, getting closer to episode 3.
Yeah, no, totally.
Because, like, he's pacing back and forth and, like, while they're waiting to be called, and Ahsoka's just sitting there very quietly.
And his hair's all frazzled up and kind of sweaty. Yeah, he looks like he's having flop sweats.
Yeah, that's just really, really nice, a nice detail, because, I mean, we've been saying it for several seasons now, how much Ahsoka has matured, but at the same time, I just feel like Anakin's becoming more and more immature because he's getting more and more impatient, which is just, where they're showing it a lot physically.
He's becoming more and more frustrated with the Jedi, too.
Yeah, which is what he should be doing at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, my next line is, last week, Ventress said a line about how these are strange times, and then Yoda kind of echoed it this time, because he was saying that, like, his dark side radar is suddenly, like, cleared up, and, like, the dark side is working against Ahsoka, and it's also working against the Jedi. But also at the same time, I'm like, wow, this came, like, you're finally sensing the dark side now, Yoda? Now?
Oh, he sensed it before. He was talking about it in episode 2. But he only senses it in a vague sort of way, you know? He can't be like, oh, we gotta watch out for Palpatine, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like the dark side is doing stuff. It's vague. It's almost working against him more than working for him that they know that, you know? It's almost more like freaking him out. Palpatine's like getting inside their heads, man.
I think it's really cool that, like, all the Force users from all sides of the spectrums are all aware that things are changing. Because, like, Maul was kind of hinting about that last arc when he was just like, you know, we're making this shift happen. And even before that, like, when Maul first came back, like, Dooku, Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Ventress all sensed Maul was back. And, like, I still think that's a really cool moment. That people from both sides of the light side and the dark side sense Maul back, and it was like, oh, that's a disturbance in the Force, a massive one. But, like, it's not just that, it's just, like, everything is changing, and even the Jedi are becoming more and more agitated as a whole, because I think this is a very frustrating situation for the Jedi Council as a whole. I mean, I don't think, like you were saying, I don't think all of them want to think that Ahsoka is guilty, but also not everybody thinks that they're innocent, and I think it goes back to that very first episode when Anakin was saying that, like, there are Jedi who don't agree with the war. I think this is just another way of showing, yeah, there are Jedi who are very against everything that's happening. So it's just another, like, moment of, like, things are happening and characters are being affected and they're getting stuck in places that they don't know what to do with it.
Indeed.
And then my last little note was the moment that the Jedi Council kick her out of the order. Hello, Rebels Ahsoka, you're being born. This is the beginning of Rebels Ahsoka, guys. I'm so excited.
Ahsoka's in season 6, though, isn't she?
I can't. I'm not telling you anything.
Oh, okay.
I'm not telling you anything. So, I will tell you yes and no.
Okay. Don't tell me no more. You don't have to tell me nothing.
Yeah, yes and no. That's all I will say.
I didn't even think of that till just now, that question. So, yeah.
Both. Both. All right, but that's all I had for Act 1. Act 2?
Act 2.
All right. In the Republic prison, Ahsoka is waiting for her in her jail cell. Anakin and Padme arrive, so finally, welcome to Season 5, Padme!
On the last episode.
Yeah, you haven't really done much in forever, but it's okay, Padme. Satine did all the Padme-ing for you before she died, so it's like you never left. Anyway, Space Mom and Space Dad try to comfort their space daughter, and Padme is going to represent Ahsoka in the Senate. Ahsoka is almost sure that it was Ventress who is behind all of this, but she has no proof. Anakin says that none of the clones saw Ventress, and he thought Ahsoka said Ventress left her beforehand, before she got to the warehouse. Ahsoka would know those red lightsabers anywhere. Anakin takes it upon himself to find Ventress and get to the bottom of this for his space daughter. So he leaves, and Space Mom sits with their kid. Ahsoka is feeling rightfully betrayed by the Order. They had made up their minds without ever hearing her out. She doesn't have much hope that the Senate will treat her any better. Meanwhile, down in the lower levels of Coruscant, Ventress is moseying along, minding her own business, when she senses something in the forest and notes a cloaked figure following her. It's Anakin, and Ventress is like, "Hey, babe! It's been a while! Last time I saw you, I had a murder brute named Savage that almost killed you when we tried to kill Dooku. Fun times!" But Anakin isn't Obi-Wan, and he has no patience to flirt banter with her today. She runs, and he chases, and they're fighting. But Ventress isn't pulling out her lightsabers. Anakin force chokes her until she says that she was only after Ahsoka for money. But when Ventress realizes how much her and Ahsoka had in common, and that's about as far as she gets, because Anakin says that Ahsoka is nothing like Ventress. And Ventress is like, "Excuse you, rude? My master abandoned me. You and your Jedi Order abandoned Ahsoka. So who is all and high and mighty now, Skyfucker?" And Anakin makes his, "Holy shit, I've made a mistake," face. Back at the prison, it's time for Ahsoka's trial. She's escorted out by clone troopers and brought before the Jedi, the Senate, and Palpatine. Padme comes out as her defense, but Farkin's dumb smug dick face strolls out as her prosecutor. And Papa Palpatine comes out like, "Hey everyone, let's have some fun. It's gonna be a great trial today. Time to kill a Jedi. I mean, give her a fair trial." Just went into my Paul C. Kelly voice. Oh yeah. And Farkin isn't playing around. He says that when he proves that Ahsoka is guilty, he will make sure that she gets the death penalty. Back in the lower levels of Coruscant, Ventress tells Anakin about how she left and was attacked by a mysterious figure. Whoever attacked her and Ahsoka also took Ventress's lightsabers. And Anakin's like, "Well, this sucks. She didn't talk to anybody else." And Ventress is like, "Wait, that's not true. Ahsoka called her BFF forever, Bear Sophie." And Anakin has a new lead and heads out. Back at the trial, Padme is doing her best to lay out why Ahsoka isn't guilty. And Farkin, like a douche, slow claps for her because he's a douche. And all but says, "Sure, Jan, that's cute. Then why is she hanging out with Ventress?" And Ahsoka says that Ventress set her up. And Anakin better hurry and find out the real killer really fast. I split it just before the killer discovery. That's why where I split it, because I had no idea where to cut it then, because these were weirdly shaped acts. What do you think of Act 2?
I think we cut it in the same place.
Okay, cool.
I like the trial music. It's like trial music. And boy, oh boy, this part really sows even more doubt for Anakin on Anakin's side. So I like that.
What kind of doubt? For who and what?
Well, just for everything that the Jedi Order is doing.
Okay, cool.
He thinks he's going to get Ventress and clear everything up. And you know, Ventress being behind all of it, that fits in real nice with the whole, you know, Jedi versus Sith versus Separatists, good guys, bad guys.
You know, that's a good point that we have yet to make, because Ventress is a really good choice, because for 5 seasons she's been their enemy, except for the one time she teamed up with Obi-Wan to stop Maul and Savage.
Right, and in a normal story, she would be behind it, and it would be just sort of like curses, the bad guy does it again. But Anakin's starting to see that, you know, maybe it's not Ventress behind all of this, and maybe I am dealing with another rogue Jedi, you know? And it's just, and at the same time, you know, the Jedi and the Senate are now, like, in the process of trying to execute his Padawan. So, yeah. it's definitely not good for Anakin's Jedi morale.
I know you hate Friends, but that just reminded me of a scene from Friends, because there's a storyline where Ross has to take a sabbatical from his museum job because he gets a shouting match with somebody, and then he finds out that his little sister is dating his best friend secretly, and so there's a point where he has taken this anxiety medicine, and he looks at Chandler and he's like, "This is not good for my rage," and he pops like 4 pills. And that's what I just imagine Anakin just going, "Ventress, this is not good for my rage." Chugs a bottle of pills. I know you hate Friends. I love Friends.
It makes me sound antisocial, but yes, I do hate Friends.
No, I can understand. Like, sometimes shows are not for everybody, and that's okay. Like, there are certain shows I know I watch that... Here's a good one. I love My Little Pony, but I'm also very well aware that it's not a show for everyone.
It's not something you go around recommending to everybody, yes.
Actually, I have argued it before, because it's actually a very progressive show for what it is, except for this new season, which has been quite atrocious so far.
Well, you could say everybody needs My Little Pony, but everybody's not going to like My Little Pony.
The way I actually sell My Little Pony is I go, "Would you watch a show where a scholar, an athlete, a veterinarian, a party planner, a fashionista, and a farmer, all women, get together to save the world?"
Maybe.
That's how I present it, because that's what My Little Pony is. That these 6 very different characters put aside their differences, become friends, and save the world multiple times. And that's how I sell it. But I also, like, as a fan of the show, I also fully understand why people wouldn't watch it, because some shows are just not for everybody. Hey, guys, that's what media is. Some things are not made for you, people who hate Last Jedi. Some things are not made for you. And that's okay. That's how life is. Like, horror movies, not made for me. I don't like them. They're not my thing. But that's fine. I'm not going to hate somebody because they like horror movies, just because it's not my thing. So... anyway,
that's
you were
good,
saying,
because I'd be in trouble.
Yeah, God, that's I hate gatekeepers and fandoms. That's my least favorite thing in the entire fucking world. But you were saying,
that's really all the notes I had for part 2.
My first note is, ooh, fucking Tarkin, I hate him so much.
Oh, they're playing him up hard too.
Oh my God.
Not to mention that it looks like they're in a room in the Death Star too, you know? It's just like, here it is, the Imperials right here, you know?
Yeah. Oh my God, just when he starts slow clapping Padme, I'm like, you're such a douche. I love this.
And he'll go on to abuse her daughter in later years too, you know? He's going to be just as much of a prick to her daughter down the line.
Yep. Also, a little note, I didn't note it, but I saw my girl, Ryo Chushi, and that was nice. I was like, there's Ryo, I love her, yay. My first real note is, thank you God for that they actually brought Padme into this arc in this season, because it also makes sense that it's Padme representing her, because she has such a long history with Ahsoka, and Padme's by far the best for this job.
Yeah. She's
and it's
definitely
a good way to finally get her into the season. She's been gone, God, for... I don't even remember last time Padme was in. Was it the Water Wars with the Mon Cala arc?
I think it that was be. The last time she had anything to do. She might have done a few walk-ons maybe since then. Don't think she's been a major part of a story arc for a long time.
I'm going down to her appearances on Wikipedia because I'm trying to remember the last time she was in this arc. The Rogue Jedi, Crisis on Naboo. Oh, she was in, the last time she was in was the undercover Obi-Wan arc when he was running around with Cad Bane. She was with Palpatine in that. And even then she didn't do anything. She was just sitting in the background.
Right.
I think she said, like, one thing to Ahsoka, like, this is a fun party. And she's like, yeah, I hope we don't die. Yeah. So, yeah, I think, but yeah, so the last time that she was really, really in this was the Gungan Season 4 Mon Cala arc, when she actually did something. Anyway, but
that
yeah.
That was last season, right?
That was the beginning of last season, right. There's the difference. It wasn't last season, end of season. It was the first arc of last season. But I just thought that was also just a really nice way to get her back into the show because, yeah, it would be Padme. Nobody, if they brought in any other person other than her, I'd be like, where the fuck is Padme? You know, this just goes back to what we were saying last week, because Ventress isn't wrong comparing herself to Ahsoka's predicament, because both of their, pretty much the people who raised them, abandoned them and kicked them out and stuff like that. I just, again, just wish we got more time of it last week and got to see it more.
Well, yeah. Well, I like that exchange because it shows how really Anakin's kind of a simplistic black and white thinker, you know?
Yeah.
So he would, like, when she said that, he was just like, no, that can't be. But just because, you know, Ahsoka's a lot better person than Ventress doesn't mean that they can't have a lot in common, you know? So,
yeah.
Although he was smart enough at least to acknowledge it when it was wagged in front of his face.
He got that carrot. Good job, donkey. Donkey! That was a nice way of me calling Anakin an ass. Anyway. My last shallow note before I go into my big note for this act, I just wanted to say something funny. When my friend Angel first watched this arc for the first time, and of course, like, Tim Curry has taken over as Palpatine because sadly Ian Abercrombie passed away, she called me up after seeing this episode and she just was like, Hope, how did no one know that Palpatine was evil? It's Tim Curry. He has the most evil voice ever.
Right, exactly. He's played the devil.
Yeah. Even worse, he played the butler in Clue. Actually, no, that's a wonderful movie. I don't know why I made that thing. If you've never seen the old Clue, please go watch it. It's amazing, and I can't believe that they're remaking that movie because the first one is perfection.
Huge flop when it came out.
But it's so good now. Communism is a red herring. I love that movie.
I've never seen it.
Oh, man. The final line is great because it's just, I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife. There are three endings to it. Like, and it's actually in the movie.
Right,
like, they had the first ending. They're like, but if it actually happened, and then they have another ending, and at the end they're like, but this is how it actually happened, and then it has that ending.
Yeah, that's not how it worked in the movie theaters either.
Really?
No. You had to go see it. It had different endings. The movie ended differently every time it played. So
that's amazing. I did not know that.
Yeah, that was one of the things that people hated about it.
Well, I
think it wasn't until they put it out on video that they were like, yeah, this was a big flop. People aren't going to buy, you know,
three DVDs.
Three VHSs. VHSs at that point for this. So we better just, you know, edit them all together at the end. They may have recut it and then tried to put it out in theaters like that, but it was too late. But originally, yeah, you had to go see the movie multiple times if it had been received well, people might have done that, you know? But it was not received well at all.
You know, that makes more sense because last year they ran a Clue comic, and it had, like, every issue had multiple covers. And for the main story was the same, but the last three pages for every single cover had a different ending. And to get the full story and all of the clues, you had to buy every issue with every cover to have the entire story. And let me tell you, it didn't sell well.
No. That's quite a commitment. And I think when the Clue movie came out, too, people weren't as hot on the idea. It wasn't as quite a normal idea then to, like, have a movie based on a board game. Although, as far as board games that would have a movie based on them, Clue is one of the ones that makes the most sense.
You want to know the hardest game I've ever played in my life? And I think I've talked about this on the show before. It's Harry Potter Clue. Because there's actually, unlike original Clue, there's ways to, like, die, like your character dies, and there are, like, 7 ways to die and only 1 way to win. And I was playing it one night with my friends, and every single one of us died, because it's Hogwarts, and you're instead of the mansion, you're going through Hogwarts, but it actually has a tourney piece, like, in the tables and stuff like that, where you turn this piece, right, and it shifts the rooms around. But also, when it shifts the rooms around, it opens, like, traps and, like, releases things. And then you have to fight these things. And at one game, all of us died. And we were just like, oh, I guess Voldemort won. Because, no, we didn't win. It was so hard.
Game over, I guess.
Yeah. But my only other note I have this, and this was my big note for this section. And I started kind of thinking about this, and I realized this. And this, I guess this kind of goes back to what you were saying about evidence, them not having evidence and stuff like that. Because when I made my point about the Jedi, this is the point I was referring to. I realized something was missing in this arc. The Jedi are not trying to meditate and find answers in the Force. And then I started thinking about it, and they used to do that a lot in early seasons. If they needed an answer to something, they would go to Yoda's little think tank room, pop a squat, and meditate. And they would search for answers in the Force. And they haven't done that in a while. And they're certainly not doing it now. And with all these, like, crazy changing times, with, like, all this dark side swirling around, they're not seeking the Force for help at all. They're acting like Farkin, and they're only looking at facts and evidence that they have. So I could also, like, really see why Ahsoka would feel betrayed by the Order, because the Order aren't acting like real Jedis and trusting the Force.
No, they're acting like bureaucrats.
Yeah.
And politicians. So, yeah. Yeah, they didn't put much thought into it at all, Force-wise. They just sort of, like, went, like, okay, what is it? Yeah. They're acting very mundane.
Yeah. So I noticed that out, and I started thinking, I was like, the last time I can actively remember them going to Yoda's think tank room was, well, when Maul first returned. But before that, I think it was like the first Cad Bane arc, when all the children were being taken, and Mace. And Anakin and Yoda all sat down to sense out the children. I think that was the last time they did it, and that was season 2. So yeah, I was like, why isn't no one meditating? But that's all I had for Act 2, and we're about to get into my fucking feelings.
Into Hope's novel coming up here, yeah.
I have 2 pages of straight notes. I will say some of these are notes that I pulled from an earlier season, so, yeah. So
yeah,
Act 3?
She's not messing around this time, guys.
Nope, time for feelings. Yay! You ready?
As ready as I'm going to be.
I promise it's good. So,
I got my needle and thread here, and I'll just sit here and sew while you do your reading to me.
Sounds good. Act 3. At the Jedi Temple, Anakin comes to Barriss' room and picks up Barriss' lightsaber. He notes that Barriss was the last person that Ahsoka talked to, and Barriss is like, well, Ahsoka and I have been BFFs forever. And they talk a moment about Ventress, and Anakin doesn't think that Ventress is behind this. And then he swings his lightsaber at Barriss, forcing her to reveal that she has Ventress's lightsabers to protect herself. And Barriss is the real mastermind behind all of this. Bum, bum, bum. Ahsoka and Barriss are BFFs forever no more. Anakin says Barriss should have gotten rid of the lightsabers, but Barriss now really likes the color red and likes these new lightsabers. Embarrassed runs, and Anakin gives chase. And they fight through the hallways of the temple. Embarrassed says that the only thing that the Jedi believe in now is violence. And the Jedi temple guards show up. Embarrassed makes a break for it, jumping out the window. Outside, our little shaver squad from the children's arc is training with their newfound lightsabers when they see Anakin and Embarrassed fighting above them. Camel Joe pulls out his own lightsaber to protect the kids as Anakin and Embarrassed fight nearby. Finally, Anakin goes into rage mode and overpowers Embarrassed in the fight. Meanwhile, back at the trial, Palpatine is giving a huge spiel like, "Don't trust this doughy-eyed Padawan. She's really part of a separatist scheme. Our enemy wants to rip us apart and rip the Jedi's apart. Man, I love the Jedi. I love the Jedi to death." And the members of the court have reached a decision. Palpatine gets the verdict. But before he can say anything, Anakin kicks in the door and stops the trial. He brings in Barriss, saying that she's the real murderer. And Ahsoka looks so hurt that her good friend set her up like this. And Barriss comes forward, saying that she realized that the Jedi are the ones responsible for the war. She claims that the Jedi are falling to the dark side and that the Republic is failing. And Palpatine is probably thinking, "Damn, I like this girl. I should be training her." And with Barriss' confession, Ahsoka is free of all charges. The Jedi Council stand before Ahsoka and apologize for not believing her. And they try to spin their lack of trust positively, saying stuff like, "It was a great trial for you. You're going to be an awesome Jedi Knight one day. The Force works in mysterious ways. This is all a good thing. Welcome back to the Jedi Order. Hooray, Ahsoka. We didn't fuck up at all." And Anakin holds out her Padawan braid, welcoming her back. And she hesitates, but then closes his hand around it, rejecting his request. She turns to the Jedi Council and leaves. And Anakin follows. Obi-Wan starts to go too, but Plo Koon stops Obi-Wan. Outside, in a beautiful scene, Anakin asks Ahsoka why she's leaving. He says that she's making a mistake. She might be, but Ahsoka knows that she has to figure this out on her own, without the Council and without Anakin. And Anakin admits that he also thought about walking away from the Order on many occasions. And Ahsoka goes, "I know. It starts with a P and ends in an Adme." And Anakin's like, "Wait, you know?" And Ahsoka's like, "Oh my god, Anakin! Everybody knows. Rex knows. Obi-Wan knew, like, episode 2. You freaking all but told me in the Saw Gerrera arc. We all know you're married to Padme by Felicia." And Ahsoka gathers up her strength. I had to throw in one last joke. Ahsoka gathers up her strength and walks away into the sunlight, to the sunset, to an unknown fate. And that would have been the end of Clone Wars if Netflix didn't pick it up for season 6. The end.
Woo! The end, question mark.
The end, but not thanks to Netflix. Thank you, Netflix. What'd you think of Act 3?
I like that Wet Blanket and those guys tried to spin it as, like, a good thing.
I know,
well,
right?
I mean, it's terrible that they did that, but that's just a great illustration of them just not owning up to being shits.
I wonder if it would have been different if they were like, "Ahsoka, we made a mistake. We were wrong. We should have trusted you. We are sorry. We will do everything we can to make this up for you." But they didn't. They were just like, this was great.
We don't
fuck
up.
It was a trial. It was a trial. You're going to be awesome. This is good. The Force works in mysterious ways. I mean, what would have that gone differently if they were just honest about their fucking mistakes?
Maybe. It just might have, yeah. If they'd eaten a little bit of crow, yeah. For sure.
Eaten a little bit of crow?
Yeah. You've never heard
that? I don't know that saying.
Yeah.
I don't know that saying.
Well, it's real.
I thought you were about to say humble pie.
Humble pie, too.
Okay, so eating a crow is the same as eating humble pie.
Maybe humble pie is made out of crow because it's cheap or something. I don't know.
What is this saying? I've never heard of eating a crow. Eating a crow.
Eating some crow.
Eating crow is a colloquial idiom used in English-speaking countries that means humiliation by admitting having to be proven wrong after taking a strong position.
Yeah.
Crow is presumably a foul-tasting, the same way as being proven wrong might be emotionally hard to swallow. Yeah. Okay.
They needed to eat some space crow.
Okay. Now it makes sense. I had no idea what you were talking about.
Yeah, I think that would have really gone a long way. I think they screwed up, and they seem to know they screwed up.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I'm just not buying the whole Barriss thing. I think her speech she gives about the Jedi is totally on point, but I don't really understand why it's her that went bad. And then when she went bad, why it's Ahsoka she's going to set up, you know, that she would just so callously, like, throw Ahsoka under the bus to the point of where she's going to get executed.
I think for the first point, I have notes for that, because Barriss being like this was an early hint back in season 2, which is why I dug back up my season 2 notes. But I think Ahsoka was just there. I think whoever investigated the bombing and happened to discover it first, that's who Barriss would have thrown under the bus.
Yeah, but at the same time, Ahsoka is also a real convenient one, because Ahsoka was very angry. You know, Ahsoka was sort of acting a little like, you know, like...
Anakin?
Yeah. She was acting overly emotional about it. And that's one of the big reasons that people were like, oh, she did it, because she was really upset about this happening more than other people. So I mean, Ahsoka was the natural one to set up, but I could see Barriss like that being, at least being like something that was tearing Barriss apart. But yeah. No, she was just sort of like, well, fuck you, Ahsoka, you know? So it's... It didn't really fly to me for her character. I think they had her character so it could be Ahsoka's friend, you know?
That's one of my, like, flaws of this episode, is I wish we had one more episode somewhere between season 2 and this, filling in that time, just to touch base with Barriss.
Yeah.
And just being, like, just seeing, even if it's just seeing that she's a little bit more pushed towards this. I wish we got... That's actually... What is my note for that? I might as well look at it.
Well, that's all my notes I got, so you're free to to dive into this ocean of pink on my Google Doc.
Yeah, just on that last note, my note was, I do wish that between the Geonosis arc and this arc, we had one more adventure with Barriss and Ahsoka to really solidify their friendship and even hint at Barriss's turn. It would have made
character.
Yeah, it would have made this ending much more hard-hitting for Ahsoka, because she's been in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, like 6 episodes of Clone Wars. Out of like 120-something.
Right, so, and only prominently featured in like...
Like 4 of them?
The Geonosis ones and these ones.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. That to me is one of the flaws of this episode. All right, there we go. So I'm just going to go straight down. When Anakin comes to Barriss's room, she's sitting in front of a figure and meditating. It's a very Hindu or South Asian kind of influenced figure statue thing. And I liked that, because I've said before, probably back in the Geonosis arc or whenever we first saw Luminara, that Luminara and Barriss's designs are very Asian, Middle Eastern, with how they wear like headscarves and stuff like that. So I just liked that. It was kind of like a nice touch to like building in that these are like kind of like the Southeast, Middle Eastern influences of Star Wars.
Yeah.
That was a very nice little touch. Hey, Chris! You remember how I've been saying I dropped a hint a few episodes ago?
Yes.
So the first episode of this arc, remember when Anakin went into Leia's jail cell to interrogate her, right?
Right.
In the background, Barriss walked by. And I was like, hey, look, it's Barriss. Aw, we haven't seen Barriss in so long. I miss her. Remember me saying that?
No.
Oh, well, I did. Because when he opens the door to walk in, Barriss is walking by in the hallway, and as she's walking by, she looks into the room, and I forgot about that, and I was just like, oh,
no,
that's Barriss.
I totally missed it.
That is well, you didn't know to look for that.
Right.
And this was the second time I've ever seen this episode. When I was like, oh, hey, there's Barriss, and when I saw her look into the room and look at Leia, that was, oh, I know that's Barriss making sure that her ducks are in a row. Yeah, so that was, I purposely was like, oh, Barriss, I haven't seen her in so long. I really miss that character, knowing that she was the killer.
And I was just like, yeah, yeah.
I know storytelling. I did that on purpose. I was just, I wasn't going to be like, hey, Bear, see, Chris, that's Bear. She's the killer. Watch her. Nah, I was going to play it way more subtly than that. I totally forgot about Barriss's line about the red lightsaber suiting her. That's a little chilling.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was just like, oh, so that's the next Ventress right there if she got away. I actually kind of wish she got away because that would have been, I would love to see like where Barriss went, which I have a note about that later too. Anyway. I did like out when the fighting is out in the garden that we got to see Camel Joe and the kids again.
Even if it's just for, I thought that they might actually like.
The either, Camel Joe fight?
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, that doesn't really make sense, but that was my first instinct when I saw him, and then it was just like, oh no, they're just sort of a background thing going on, but that was cool.
I do like the fact that, though, whenever the camera panned across the kids and Camel Joe, he had his lightsaber out, it was lit up, and his hand was in front of the children. Like, he was like, yeah, this is Anakin and Barriss's fight, but if it turns, I will protect these children.
Right, that's, yeah.
That was a nice moment. I actually really liked that.
And to the fact of, like, how does he know who's on whose side?
Well, probably the red lightsabers are an indicator.
Yeah, that's true. But then again, he's Camel Joe. He might have also been like, I don't know, I've always been a little suspicious of that Anakin guy, too.
Yeah. And also, like, I'm sure it's gotten around the Jedi Council what's happening with Ahsoka, and he probably knows that Anakin is Ahsoka's master, so he probably has a reason to be a little bit wary of him, too.
Right, right.
So, but I liked that moment that every time the camera passed by them, his lightsaber, I think he also has a white lightsaber, I think. Either that or they just didn't color it, because the only person that's known to have lightsabers is Rebels Ahsoka. But, or it could have just been how the light was hitting it. But the camera was going back and forth really fast. So it's not I had a chance to really look at his lightsaber. But there was, I just liked that the fact that his lightsaber was out, it was lit up, and he was ready to fight for those children, which was a nice moment for him. For not always having Camel Joe in the show.
I always want more Camel Joe. I liked his character.
Yeah. Okay, so now to Barriss talking to the Senate and confessing. When Barriss is telling the Senate to their faces that the Jedi are corrupt, that's a mighty good way to push the Senate more against the Jedi, because here's living proof of it.
Right.
Because by now they've already had Dooku, Pong Krell, and now Barriss all turning on the Jedi. And the Jedi are clearly not in the best light, probably, in front of the Senate right now, especially since they were fighting so hard to keep Ahsoka's trial with them. They didn't want Ahsoka to be tried at the Senate. So I'm sure that that's not a good thing right before Episode 3 to be like, hey, the Senate is actually seeing living proof of how bad the Jedi are.
Or even if it's not interpreted as how bad they are, it's just like, they don't have they do not have their ship in order.
Yeah.
And having the Jedi ship in order is pretty important, because the Jedi are really powerful.
And that's actually like multiple things, because not only are the Jedi leading this war, we know from the second episode of this arc, Palpatine has been trying to push the Senate to take military power away from the Jedi and give it to people like Farkin.
Well, the great thing about Palpatine's plan is that, you know, he is manipulating things so that it looks worse for the Jedi, but he's just tweaking things. He truly doesn't have to like manufacture the problems with the Jedi, you know.
Except for a big fucking war, he had to manufacture that.
Well, yeah, but the big war was sort of something the Jedi got swept up into. That was part of his plan too, but he knew sweeping them into it, they had their problems already, and that was just going to like
the war exposed, because Palpatine created the Clone Wars, like,
right.
Tiny spoiler for Season 6, we get the explanation of how Palpatine created the Clone Wars on purpose to expose the Jedi. Tiny spoiler for Season 6. But, yeah, I mean, pretty much this war is just showing like, just pretty much exposed the weaknesses that were already there of the Jedi.
Right, right. It exposes them, and it makes them it makes them worse, and it just speeds up the process of the Jedi's degradation, basically.
Yeah. And just a Rebels note, just a reminder, one of those Jedi Temple guards in there with Barriss is the future Grand Inquisitor, so her speech made him start turning and changing his mind in this moment. That's fun. Just to throw it out there. Okay, so I went back, and way back when we did the Geonosis arc, I had made the notes of Barriss being like, hey, we need to watch this character, it's going to be important for season 5. And it all boils down to this. So I actually went back and I dug up my old notes from the episode Brain Invaders, and I just wanted to read some tidbits from that. So this was from my summary of, I think it was Act 2, which is in the mess hall, Ahsoka and Barriss chat about peace after missions. Ahsoka admits as a Jedi she doesn't know how to find peace. Barriss says that they are peacekeepers, they're keepers of the peace, not warriors. And when the war ends, it will be their job to keep the peace. Ahsoka doesn't know the difference between peacekeepers and warriors. And Barriss says that she should ask Anakin. But Ahsoka admits that Anakin's plans for the future are radical. She doesn't think that he could handle peaceful times either. And then my notes was, first thing about Ahsoka and Barriss' talk in the mess hall. I think it's very telling about this new batch of Padawans being trained. Unlike Jedi 1,000 years before them, they're being trained for war. This is a new generation where they're not peacekeepers, but military generals. These teenagers outrank men in the military. That's a ton of responsibility. It's also telling that Ahsoka doesn't know the difference between a peacekeeper and a warrior, because in her experience thus far, they're the same thing. And then there are three bits of foreshadowing in this mess hall conversation. One is Barriss says about how the Jedi are to be peacekeepers, not warriors, which comes back to this episode where Barriss is talking about how the Jedi have become violent. I don't want to spoil it for Chris, so all I will say that her views are pivotal to a season 5 arc. Second is Ahsoka hits the target when she says that Anakin's plans for the futures aren't peaceful. Of course, we know that because he becomes Vader. And three, Ahsoka is wondering what it even means to be a Jedi. And then they discuss what does it mean to be a Jedi. And Barriss keeps saying they need to be peacekeepers, but we're not this. It dictates her choices in season 5 and her journey to Rebels. So the reason I pulled this back up is because, well, for one, I talked about it 3 seasons ago. But now we're here and we can discuss it. Early on, we saw that Barriss was already doubting the Jedi in the war, and she mentioned it a couple times during the Geonosis arc in general. And she was questioning why the Jedi were even fighting in the first place, and she raised that question to Ahsoka a few times in the Geonosis arc, which goes back to me wishing we had one more Ahsoka-Barriss episode between Geonosis and this episode. Because back in Geonosis, Barriss was just a Padawan doubting the war in her place. In this arc, she's fully fallen, and she's willing to kill people and throw Ahsoka under the bus to prove her point. So we had those early hints. They've been there. They've always been there with Barriss. And it was
right,
early.
But I wonder
we didn't
if
get
those,
to see the change.
I wonder if those hints, you know, I mean, to me, though, with her character, it seemed more likely that would be those would be the reasons that she would choose to, like, leave the Jedi Order, not to start being, you know, like a killer terrorist taking out innocent people, to turn people against the Jedi. You know, that's some, you know, totally cold-blooded, you know, sort of terrorist actions. And she's complaining about not being a peacekeeper. So there has to be something that pushed her to the point of where she's like, well, it's okay for me to kill civilians to make this point, you know? And we don't see it, or we don't really get any sort of hint as to what it was that happened to it, or if it was somebody like, you know, Palpatine had some influence on, you know what I mean?
It would have been also different if, like, she saw Luminara die, and of course we know Luminara is not dead.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Something that went wrong with her master or something.
Yeah.
But it didn't. It doesn't seem like that's the case at all. You know, and I mean, it would seem like it would have to be something very dramatic and radical to drive you to the point of where you're going to, like, you know, cold-bloodedly basically murder the person that you had one of your, like, like an incredible life experience with, that, like, in that you owe your life to, you know, that you guys had a moment where they you know, saved each other's lives.
Yeah.
So it doesn't quite make sense outside of just sort of the story-ness of it, you know?
And I'm not disagreeing with you, because that is the flaw of this episode, is Barriss. And because, like, we have these hints in the Geonosis arc, and then we have this Barriss. We don't have the in-between, and that's what is needed here.
Right, it's so something really radical, and it even could only be something she just hints at it with Ahsoka, like, you know, you don't know the people that I've met, or you don't know the things that I've seen, you know, or something like that, just to point, you know, point out something not even specific that happened, you know?
Yeah, and I absolutely agree. But I do like that they place those hints that early in the show, and that they've always been there. I totally agree. We needed to see the in between that and this, because going from a teenager doubting her place in a war to I'm killing people now, and the Jedi are violent, so let me respond violently. Those are two different sides of the spectrum for this child, and we need that middle story, and that is the biggest flaw of this episode. But the reason I just dug this up, because I liked that they put those hints that early on that Barriss had doubts in this war. And I guess it goes back to what Anakin was saying in the first episode of this, was there are Jedi who have doubts about this war. Here's Barriss, season 2. She had doubts about this war. Which is not a bad thing. I mean, it's just bad that we didn't get to see the in-between. That's the bad thing.
Right, because there's so many other ways that she could have reacted to the Jedi being shits.
I mean, it could have been something as simple as, like, maybe I would actually really love to have seen, like, she didn't mean to blow up the bomb. Like, she was just trying to find a way to expose it and, like, have Leta be more of the mastermind, and then Barriss got caught up into it, and then she just spiraled out of control because she didn't know what to do.
Right.
But then she could have still come back to the same place of, like, well, I came to Leta in the first place because I agreed with her that the Jedi are corrupt. And we could have gotten to the exact same place. But it could have been just a different story of, here's this teenager who just got in over her head, but it still proved her point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There are just different ways they could have presented this, but I just do appreciate that it's always been here this entire time that Barriss has doubted this war. That's really what I was. It doesn't make it better, but that's what I was trying to.
Now, do you think they planned this way back then, a couple seasons ago, or do you think they went and said, who would be a good character for this? Oh, well, Barriss has, you know, said this and this. I mean, what I'm asking, I guess, is do you think they originally meant her to eventually be a Jedi that would go bad?
My answer is possibly. Uh-huh. Back in season 2, I doubt that they knew that they would get to this point, because Dave Filoni even said in the background information video that they never expected to have the show this long and mature Ahsoka to this point.
Oh, right, okay.
But that being said, I think when it probably came to them writing this episode, they would be like, well, who would probably betray Ahsoka that's not Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Padme?
Right, right.
Or Plo Koon, or Rex. And that would be Barriss. She's the only other person that would really emotionally hit Ahsoka in that way. So I don't think back in season 2 they planned for it, but I think when they got to this point now, they were like, you know, we have this other character and she had doubts before. I think that would be the good character to put in the situation.
Right,
That's not Anakin, Obi-Wan, Padme, Rex, or Plo Koon. So, because it can't be any of those five. Well, I guess it could have been Rex, but it couldn't be any of the four Legends characters. Not that Rex would do this, because Rex is precious. Right. So I think the answer to that is both. I think that they didn't plan for it back then, but when it came to actually writing this, it was like, yeah, she's the best choice. Though I have to say, as Barriss is giving her confession, she's not wrong. The Jedi are falling to the dark side, and the Republic is failing.
Yep, no, her speech is totally on point.
She's not wrong. Okay, and my last note about Barriss's confession is, I just kind of wish Luminara was in the room, because that's her master. And even if Luminara doesn't say anything, just having her sitting with the other Jedis just to see her reaction that her Padawan actually did this, that would have been great, especially since Luminara's been pretty absent from the show for seasons. I don't even remember the last time Luminara was in the show. Was it Cloak of Darkness?
Oh my god.
Like, I'm double-checking it now. But yeah, like, Luminara... I really wish we got to see her reaction to... No, the last time she was in was the Geonosis arc, was the last time Luminara was in the show. I wish she had been in this, just even just sitting with the Jedi, just to see her just, like, shocked that her Padawan did this. Because that would have been super telling.
Well, she... well, I guess, to her credit, she wouldn't have known that her Padawan was going to show up there. Hauled in by Anakin, so that's probably why she wasn't there, maybe.
Yeah. But, and there's always the explanation of Luminara is off in a battle or something.
Right,
but then why isn't her Padawan off in a battle, too?
She has Jedi flu.
Yeah. Okay. Now for the other big thing, Ahsoka leaving the Order. So first and foremost, when Ahsoka is leaving after she gives Anakin back her braid, and Anakin's all sad. But oh my god, look at Obi-Wan and Plo Koon in the background. Like, especially Obi-Wan, he looks so devastated. And he actually tries to leave to go with Anakin, but Plo Koon stops him. Which needed to be done, because that last scene needed to be Anakin and Ahsoka. But Obi-Wan and Plo Koon, their space daughter is gone and they can't stop her. Ugh.
She flew the nest.
Yeah, they're empty nesters now.
Yeah. Anakin totally would not have been able to say the stuff he said about the Jedi Order with Obi-Wan sitting there.
Yeah, though, I realized the scene I needed as Ahsoka was leaving. Because the first time I watched this, this was before Rebels happened. This was before we even knew Ahsoka was coming back or anything. So the first time I ever watched this, this was a huge twist and revelation for me. Because I was just in tears when Ahsoka was leaving, and I was screaming at my television. Because this was huge. This was one of the main characters leaving the show. And it was my favorite Clone Wars character leaving the show. And then I realized as I was watching the second time around, Ahsoka didn't get to say goodbye to Rex. She never got to say goodbye to him. And then I was like, Dave Filoni, just give me 10 seconds. 10 seconds of her walking out, and there's Rex outside, and all he does is silently salute and leave her. Like, he just sees her face, knows that she's leaving, and he salutes her, and she walks past him. That's all I needed, Dave Filoni! That's all I needed! They didn't have to say anything, Dave!
Life can't always be that satisfying, Hope.
They don't even get to see each other again until Rebels. Actually, I take that back. Technically, they saw each other at the Siege of Mandalore, but right. it never got made, Dave Filoni. It never got made. God damn it, make the goddamn Siege of Mandalore already. Oh, but that's what I needed was... But yeah, like, Ahsoka, I just was so upset the first time I watched this episode and Ahsoka was leaving. Because she was very much my Clone Wars experience. I mean, I've talked about it before on the show. Ahsoka is the reason I started loving Star Wars. Because I liked Star Wars before, but Ahsoka was the character that made me love Star Wars. Hell, I have a fucking Fulcrum tattoo on my arm now for Ahsoka. And it's for Ahsoka. And it's just, I was just in shock. I was in absolute shock, which it had to be a different experience for you because you knew that she came back in Rebels and you just pretty much you didn't know how she left, right? That was the reason?
Right. But even if I would have seen this and I would have thought and I would have been like, oh, I mean, when this aired, everybody thought this was the end anyway.
Well, when it aired, they just figured it would get renewed, and then
If I would have thought another season was coming after I saw this episode, I would have been like, oh, they're just going to resolve this at the beginning of next season.
The beginning of next season
will be whatever the storyline is that brings Ahsoka back in. I wouldn't have thought that they were ushering her out of the show because it's an animated show.
The actress was like,
I don't want to play Ahsoka anymore. They could have gotten another voice actress or something.
But the thing is, 9 days later, the show was canceled.
Right.
After they aired. So then it would have, which I have actually want to talk to you about when we get there. But yeah, like, this entire scene just gave me chills. And then I was like, God, think about what this does to Anakin. I mean, that's just another huge backslide for him, because it was the council's actions that pushed his Padawan away, and he loses Ahsoka. And this is another major loss in his life on top of so many, like his mother and everything.
Oh, I think if Ahsoka wasn't around, it would have been a lot harder for Palpatine to turn him.
Really? How so?
Because she's his Padawan. She looks up to him. He wouldn't want to turn, you know. She's like, you know, it's like having a, she's like a Jiminy Cricket effect. You know what I mean?
Wait, you said if Ahsoka wasn't around, do you mean like if she was never there? Is that what you mean?
No, I mean if she was around in episode 3.
Oh,
and an effect on his life, it would have been a lot harder for Palpatine to turn him. Then, you know, I think having an apprentice like that is sort of like gives you a moral compass. It's like having your kids around, you know. It's like the father when his kids leave and his wife dies and the kids leave, he sits down and becomes an alcoholic, you know. Wouldn't have done that if he had his kids around, because they wouldn't want him to see him become an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Not that she could have stopped him from changing, but it would have definitely been a lot harder.
Yeah. But to me, like, this action by the council and Ahsoka leaving is probably the hardest push towards Vader that they could have given him.
Yeah.
More than any other episode in this entire series.
Yeah. I agree with that.
This is the hardest shove towards Vader that Anakin has. All right. So, I have two more. I have 2.5 more notes, I promise. We're almost done. I told you, I had a shit ton of notes for this section. So, after this episode, The Clone Wars was canceled. At this time, the fans didn't know that Netflix was going to pick it up. I don't actually know when Netflix picked it up in the time period. So, my question for you is, if Netflix never picked up the series, would have this been a satisfying series finale?
No.
Really?
No, not for me. I mean, it would have satisfying as in, yeah, I mean, it fits into the, but there was obviously things that they were working on going towards episode 3 at this point. So it wasn't, I would have, if they were going to tie it all off in an end, I would want a more satisfying end to it, or a more almost a more dark pushing you know towards episode 3. It can't be completely like that, because Anakin's still pretty chipper in episode 3 at the beginning, but yeah, it's a satisfying ending for the end of a season, for sure. I would have considered it almost like a semi cliffhanger, you know. Mm-hmm. If I would have seen it and thought it was coming back, but it would have been a good way to end a season. I don't think it's as good a way to end a show.
You ready? I'm yes. Gonna disagree with you. I have the opposite.
Go ahead.
Yeah, because don't get me wrong, I'm happy to always have more Clone Wars. I love almost all of season 6. And I still want the Siege of Mandalore more than anything else. But at the same time, if this had been the end of the show, I think they covered all their bases.
I also don't know what season 6 is like too, so I don't have that working for me.
But the thing, like, because especially this arc was the arc that could have ended it all, because we got to see the beginning of the Empire. We got to see people like Tarkin coming to power. We got to see all those Imperial notes. We got to see the clones turning on a Jedi. We got to see the shady Jedi Council. We got to see the people turning on the Jedi Council. This was the first steps of the Senate turning on the Council. And it explains why Ahsoka wasn't around in Episode 3 in Order 66. I mean, I think they covered absolutely all their bases at the end of the season. And it would have been a very huge open ending, but they covered everything that they needed to cover in Clone Wars and what they worked for 5 seasons to fill in the gaps between Episode 2 and Episode 3. And I thought it would have been a beautiful ending and an open ending. And if this was the end of Clone Wars, I would have loved it. And I'm super satisfied if this was the ending.
I wouldn't have been necessarily unsatisfied. I
always want more Star Wars and Clone Wars, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But if this had been the ending, I could at least look back at the show and be like, they covered everything that they needed to cover
was
to get us
from
Episode 2 to
Episode 3. Was it more satisfying to you than the ending of Rebels?
I have problems with the ending of Rebels because those goddamn fucking space whales. Because I understand why they're there, and it makes sense why they're there, and it makes the space... You know what's actually really funny that I've noticed recently? Before the series finale of Rebels, the first space whale episode where they show up and Ezra makes a connection with them was hailed as one of the worst episodes of Rebels. Now, because of the season finale and them coming back... This on every fucking must-watch list of Rebels.
Now everybody loves the space whales now, yeah.
It's on every must-watch list of Rebels.
Now the space whales are so cool.
Yeah, yeah. I understand why they're there, and it makes sense why they're there, but it's still, I'm not okay with it. Like, oh, that's how they beat Thrawn with space whales, and I can't believe they beat Thrawn with space whales. I'm not those goddamn fucking space whales. And I think that's the most frustrating part, because it makes sense, and it's a good play, and it's a good play by Ezra, and that is because Thrawn would never account that a fleet of space whales would take out his ships. He would never calculate for space whales, so it makes sense, and that's a frustrating thing, because it's actually a really good move, and it
nobody
makes me
ever expects space whales.
Nobody expects the Spanish space whale Inquisition. But to get back to the point, I would have been absolutely satisfied if this was the ending of Clone Wars, because it had its nice fade to black moment, and they covered everything that they needed to cover between Episode 2 and 3. So, if there was never a Season 6 and they never did anything else ever again with Clone Wars, I'd have been like, yeah, there it is. Perfect.
Interesting.
Yeah. My last note, here we go. I promise it's the last one, and then we'll be done. And it's actually a Rebels note.
Whoa.
Something just to say, you know the Inquisitor, the Seventh Sister, she's the girl. She's the exact same species as Barriss. And a lot of fans wanted her to be Barriss. And I can actually see both sides of this argument, because I agree it would have been really cool if Barriss had been freed and
would
she became the
Seventh Sister. Or she broke away, or Palpatine had her let go. Yeah,
and because we've known Barriss has fallen to the dark side, it would have been really cool if it was Barriss, and she would have a history with Ahsoka and have reason to be hunting Ahsoka. But at the same time, I did like the fact that we did get a new character. The thing that I'm not okay with is the fact that they never went into it in the show. Like, we really don't know anything about her. We don't know how she became an Inquisitor. And yeah, we're getting in the Rebels, the current Darth Vader comic. The current Darth Vader comic is going through all the Inquisitors and, like, how they became Inquisitors and stuff like that. So she's probably going to show up there. I just would have liked to have seen it in the show. So I have to agree with a lot of fans that it would have been really cool if Barriss had become the Seventh Sister in Rebels.
Now, is she not? Oh, so
she's
not, according to the comics.
No, they've already confirmed it in the show. She's not Barriss.
Oh.
But she's the same species, and she would have reason to be going after Jedi, and has reason to fall to the dark side. So I agree with a lot of fans that the Seventh Sister should have been Barriss.
Why bother making her the same species out of all the species in the galaxy?
Yeah.
If you weren't going to pursue that. And it's too obscure to be for it to be like a tease or something. You know what I mean? It's
only... Yeah. And like Rebels does so good building on top of Clone Wars. That would have been another really good thing to build on top of Clone Wars. Especially because the Seventh Sister and Ahsoka face off a few times.
And it wouldn't have messed up anything either, like continuity wise.
Yeah, it could have been like that first time that Ahsoka comes out of the hangar, whips out her white lightsabers to fight the seventh sister and the fifth brother. If the Seventh Sister flipped up her visor and it was Barriss and Ahsoka saw that, what an awesome moment that would have been. That would have been fucking amazing.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, well, they squandered that.
Yep. But that's all I have for season 5.
Oh, you want me to rate it up?
Oh, man. Yeah, I've done plenty of talking. Please talk.
Up from last week, I still, and you know me, I look at different things than you. This one gets an 8.5, so it's still a very good episode. It gets the 8.5 for the important things that it does with Ahsoka's character. But other than that, I think, not to use the word squandered again, I think the first episode of this was so incredibly strong that I almost want to go back and give it like a 9.5 in relation to these episodes.
You'll have a chance to do it because our season wrap-up is next
week. That's right. Next week will be the season wrap-up. But I don't want to retro-change any of my scores. I'll go through them. But that one has been bumped up a little more because it set up such a good, dark feeling and tension of Ahsoka being, you know, wrongly accused and things going wrong in the Jedi Order. And I think it could have resolved. I think the whole Barriss aspect of it sort of sidelined it. And if it would have followed through on its initial, you know, dark things are starting to go down, and it would have continued that mood, I think it would have been like, this would have been like a, you know, curve up to a 10 on this arc. But I think my favorite episode of the arc was the first one. So 8.5. I keep sounding like my score is a trashing of it, but it's not at all. It's a really good episode.
Actually, a question I want to ask you is, did you like the final talk between Ahsoka and Anakin?
I liked it a lot because, you know, you had Anakin going like, you have no idea how much I totally feel, you know, I can feel you, you know. So, yeah, I did like it. Yeah, that was definitely, that stuff was not what I had the problem with in this arc. Mm-hmm. As far as the arc goes, it totally makes sense for Ahsoka not to do it. As a matter of fact, when she was sitting there, I was thinking to myself, don't do it.
Yeah.
I kept, you know, when she was sitting there, I kept thinking to myself, you know, the part where they took her beads off the back, and it's just like, yeah, no, screw you guys.
Yeah.
I'm going home.
You know, I just had another question for you. Dave Filoni was saying that, like, him and George Lucas were going back and forth between Ahsoka living and Ahsoka dying. Do you think that this is better than Ahsoka dying at some point, which is what all the fans assumed that was going to happen at some point in the show?
That's what I assumed, too, because it's still, I'm not as much anymore now that I've seen how they pulled off Rebels. But at the same time, like, okay, Ahsoka's not a Jedi anymore, so maybe that would save her from Order 66. But I just can't... It's hard to wrap my mind around, even though she's not a Jedi, she is Jedi-trained, being out in the galaxy and not either being drawn into the, you know, into the main Jedi Sith conflict, you know, just by their sheer, you know, force power, their sheer connectedness with the Force. So I was never big on the idea of like, ah, she just vanishes into the background or something like that. But it seems like they're pretty good at making that work. So it's plausible to me now.
We'll talk about it because, like, you know, we've been saying for a while now that we're going to do an episode, maybe probably two or three, filling in the gaps between Clone Wars and Rebels that would have been.
More towards it now than I would have when it originally aired.
But one of those gaps is the Ahsoka novel, which is what happens to Ahsoka after Clone Wars and before Rebels. And a big part of that book is Ahsoka wrestling with the fact that whether or not she should come back. That's a half the book. Is because, like, she finds this tiny, like, backwater planet, and she finds a little home there for, like, a year. But then when the Empire shows up, she starts struggling. She's like, well, I could go help these people, but then I'll be a Jedi again, but I don't want to be a Jedi again. What does it mean to be a Jedi again? Like, that's half of the Ahsoka novel, is her struggling with the fact of, does she want to be a Jedi?
You don't even have to be a Jedi. You just have to have human empathy, you know?
Yeah. And so there's a really cool moment in the book where she finds that middle place, which is who she is in Rebels. And it's how she became Fulcrum and why she became Fulcrum and how she got into that place where she could still use her Jedi-ness but not be a Jedi. That's what the Ahsoka novel is how she got to that point. So if you guys are feeling the same way as Chris and you're not sure how she got from Clone Wars to Rebels, please go read the Ahsoka novel, because that's half the novel is Ahsoka struggling with, well, what do I do now? Do I come back? If I come back, would I be a Jedi again? I don't want to be a Jedi again. They fucking screwed me, but all my friends are dead. So we'll get into that more later and stuff like that. So, well, for me, my score, to me, this emotionally, it hits all the notes. It does everything I want it to do. And this is the best episode of the season for me. I have a ton of nitpicks about this episode, and we talked about them already. But overall, like, all the emotional and character beats are there. In a post-Rebels world, this gives so much to that series, this episode. It's kind of like the Steela episode in the Saw Gerrera arc, where when it aired, it was just a one little episode adventure thing. But in a post-Rogue One, a post-Rebels world and stuff like that, that episode has so much weight.
Right.
This episode does the same thing.
Right.
Because this shows how Ahsoka leaves Clone Wars to get to Rebels. This shows this is the point where the Grand Inquisitor goes to the dark side. And so, like, again, this is one of those things where Rebels retroactively makes this episode even better. And Barriss, you know, I don't, while I wish and I need to see, we needed to see how Barriss got from Geonosis to here. I also don't think she's wrong. She's spilling truth tea everywhere like a cat on a counter.
Yeah,
and she's not
it's
wrong.
Just her actions that are wrong.
Yeah. And just everything about this episode, like, is in that final scene with Anakin and Ahsoka. It's beautiful. That's a beautiful scene. It's gorgeous. And the music is gorgeous. And the background and the clouds and the sunset is beautiful. And it's everything. And it's heart-wrenching. And it's perfect. And if the series had ended here, this would have been a perfect ending of Clone Wars for me. So it's my 10 for 10 of the season.
I can totally see that.
This episode has hope written all over it.
Yes, it totally does. Totally.
Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. Especially on iTunes, because when you rate and review the show, it helps people find the show. And this week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode, Eminence. Take it away, Chris, with the wild and crazy guys.
God, when was the last time we got a iTunes review?
March of last year.
Oh, yeah, yay. Get on it.
I'm actually wondering, because I haven't updated my iTunes in forever, I'm wondering if I updated the iTunes, if it's not showing me that, because I have an old iTunes.
No, probably not. No, yeah, you'd probably see it.
Yeah.
All right, so Paul C. Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
For the episode Eminence. When I first saw this episode, I was excited to see the Black Sun Gang come to life from the old EU. Oh, yeah. Reminded me of the good old days playing Shadows of the Empire for the N64.
Oh, that's old.
Beggar's Canyon, I used to play the N60. I used to play Pod Racer on the N64 and Rogue Squadron. Oh, yeah. Beggar's Canyon Chase is a good tune from that soundtrack. Prince Xizor was leader of Black Sun between Empire and Jedi and tries to seduce Princess Leia.
You.
He was lucky Maul was not around during his reign. Oh no, Dash Rendar was the man. Dash Rendar was the main protagonist in that story.
And the man.
He was a smuggler. Bit too similar to Han Solo, but I think he was supposed to be at the time. You got to battle IG-88 and Boba Fett in that game. Kind of outdated now, though. That mass decapitation in the Black Sun meeting, I think, may have beat out the decapitation in the meeting scene from Kill Bill. Oh, yeah. And then I said, I have that soundtrack, and that explains a lot of the song titles. Because I never read the books, but I have the soundtrack to it.
Before we get to the candy, speaking of song titles, can I share something with you?
Sure.
So, the Rogue One soundtrack, the actual score, the composer, what he does is he adds joke subtitles for each track on the CD sleeve, and there's the main song title, and then in parentheses, there's joke song titles. Can I read these to you?
Sure.
They're hilarious. Okay, so I'm just going to go down the line. A Chronic Condition, Jin and Scarrett, Jincarcerated, Going to Seesaw, That New Death Star Smell, this one's my favorite, Jedha Call Saul, When Ambush Comes to Shove, Go Do That You Do So Well, Have a Choke and Smile, Urso in Vain, this is my other favorite, Takes One to Rogue One.
Oh, Jesus.
The Worst Vacation Destination, which is Scarif. Scarif Tactics. When Things Are Exploding, the song is called Blazed and Confused. Switch Hunt, Transmission Impossible. And Lit and Let Jedi.
See, I think he did the same thing for the Planet of the Apes soundtracks, too.
But oh my god, Takes One to Rogue One and Jedha Call Saul is amazing. Okay, Candy.
Ooh, what are we doing? What are we doing today? I'm glad you picked the small one earlier.
I know, I'm thinking two small ones tonight. We have so many small things in here. There's kind of like, I think it's like a biscuit thing. It's like Barihaya chocolate.
What's it called?
It's a yellow package. There's also the blueberry gems, the Old Faithful.
Oh, I see the Barnard chocolate one. It looks like a Fig Newton or something.
You want to do that one?
Let's do that one.
Okay, so if you're wondering why we're eating candy, Chris hates American Kit Kats because he sucks. And our... He's like Farkin in a dick face. No, you're not like Farkin. You're quite lovely. But our friend Dario Gonzalez sends us candy from all over the world because he's a flight attendant. And Dario is Chris's co-podcaster from Eat It and Beat It. So we review candy from all over the world on the show. So this is my package is wrinkled. The Bar-du-coco Bar-ri-hun-ha chocolate.
Now, we have to address this packaging. This, I think it's supposed to be like, this is for cool kids because it's got inline skates.
I'm just trying to figure out what...
Headphones, a skateboard, and then pens.
Oh, this is from Brazil. I was trying to find where it was from.
It does look like a Fig Newton, but filled with chocolate.
Okay, I'm going to open it now. Oh, it does look like...
Anything wrong with that?
Oh, it smells good. It smells like a chocolate chip cookie.
It tastes like a chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah.
It's like a chocolate chip cookie flavored Fig Newton.
It's not as soft as a Fig Newton, because those are really, like, super squishy and soft.
No, I think maybe it might have been as soft when it was brand new.
That's true. It's been sitting in our box for a few weeks. But it's still good.
The filling is still goopy inside, frostingy. But it is. It tastes just like a chocolate chip cookie.
But it's not too sweet. I like that. Well, as always, thank you, Dario. We love you. We love you so much. Thank you. You're the best. Well, that's all I have for season 5. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me in the hospital having a diabetic coma.
Oh. That took a dark turn.
After doing 2 episodes of candy in a row.
Hey, we chose small candy this time.
That's true. No, I can handle my sugar. You can find me at twotruefreaks.com, where I sit amongst metric tons of podcasts, if you can weigh them. And let me say, our podcasts are not lightweight, man, as you can tell from this one.
God, how long was this
episode? Some pretty heavy shit, man. We got all our podcasts there. You can go check them out. You can check them out when they come out by going to Facebook and which used to be where everybody was, but apparently not anymore. But you can go to Two True Freaks at Facebook and see all our new episodes coming up. And you can go to our cantina to just shoot the shit. And you can go to Twitter, which is, I guess, where all the cool kids are at nowadays, and see all our shows posted there. And that is run by Gene, the podcasting machine.
I'm going to try and whistle, but I'm a bad whistler.
Okay. Wow. All right. You want me to try it? I don't know. I got to get a drink of water. I'm still chocolate mouth. I'm confident I might be able to do better than that, and I'm not a good whistler either, but boy, hope. Ooh.
You gotta work. I also learned how to whistle by 5-year-old. Don't blame them.
You gotta work on that. You don't have much fun. Okay, hang on. Gene?
Yeah, that was way better. I thought you were gonna be at least, like, worse than that, because you were like, oh, I'm not that good of a whistler. That was awesome, Chris.
Thank you.
Very good.
Where can people find you, Hope?
There we go. Anyway, you can find me at Twitter on JGuysAndJedi. Excuse me, sorry, I know I have the hiccups. I run our Twitter page. You can also find me at Hope Malamets. That's my personal Twitter account. I'm also writing a Thrawn fanfiction called Forces of Gravity. It's on Archive of Our Own, or AO3. My name's under Chaos Lydia.
Well, God, and I hope you write Thrawn fanfiction better than you whistle.
I do. yeah, I do. I'm also beta reading my best friend's fan fiction. We're helping her out with that, and I'm the editor for it. It's called Valkyrie Strike, and that's a more traditional Thrawn fan fiction where it's Rebel Thrawn, but mine is Romance Thrawn. So pick your poison.
Romance Thrawn, a new genre.
Hey, for 11 chapters. It's a slow burn, if you like slow burn fan fiction. I put up 11 chapters today. It's over 93,000 words, and he just asked her out.
Oh.
It's a slow burn, and it's going to cover, like, 20 years of their lives. So, yeah. Oh, gosh. Oh, no, I have to do a revolution next week.
Get to work.
Oh, God. Actually, it's going to be really easy because Rex was only an Onderon in this arc.
Right. He wasn't in the rest of it. There's not a lot of Rexvolution in this season, unfortunately.
Actually, though, the last few Rexvolutions, I've just made up what Rex was doing while he wasn't on mission, so that will happen, probably. But, oh my god, I have to do a goddamn Rexvolution next season. I am so scared of them, guys, every time. And I know you guys are like, we love their explosions, they're fun, and stuff like that, and stuff. And can we just go ahead and agree, instead of picking our five worst episodes, just say the droid arc? Can we go ahead and just agree on that?
I think we pretty much know where some of the best and worst is going to lie, but...
Can't, this is going to be hard to choose the best five, though, between, like, Maul and everything, and...
Oh, it'll be interesting. And just think, you only have one more Rex Volution after this.
No, then, because we have 12 episodes.
And then you have a couple seasons of Rebels off before you get Rex back in the game.
Actually, that could be equally as fun of, like, what is Rex doing in season one of Rebels.
Right, but you only... Yeah.
Actually, thinking... Well, I'll remind me to ask you about season six after this.
Getting
anyway.
Way ahead of ourselves here.
Yeah, but I guess come back next week where you'll automatically know what our least favorite episodes of season 5 was. But our surprise, there will probably be surprises for the best episodes of season 5, so yeah. I tell you, it's not Gaston.
See you then.
Bye, guys!
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Sock it to me?